home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're not just going to talk about football this week, or Justin Tucker missing kicks, or whether the Ravens are going to get themselves righted, or even whether the Orioles are going to sign some free agents before all this is over with. It is the holiday season. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road many, many times. We're going to be at Coco's as well as a Gertrude's over at the BMA. We're getting artistic this week with Dan Roderick's having a little. We're gonna bring a man to culture. I think this week over at the BMA. We're also going to be next week at Fadley's down at Lexington Market on the 12th. All of it brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I will have Ravens scratch-offs to give away. This has been a lucky batch, luckier than the Ravens were against the Eagles last week for sure. Also, our friends at Jiffy Lube MultiCare powering us up. We've also got 26 oysters in 26 days for our 26th anniversary around here. All of that powered up by Curio Wellness and Foreign Daughter as well. As our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, 1-800-CLEAN-WATER. They keep my water clean as well as give me clean water. And I have dirty well water that they somehow sanitize and make nice. This guy's an old friend. I love having authors on and professors and residents on, especially when they're Johns Hopkins. But word came to me out on the socials that Tim Wendel was coming back home, as we would say here. That's Tim Kirchen, not Tim Wendel. That's the other baseball writer. He's coming home this week to autograph his book for the holidays and sell it off. And it's not even like Castro or Cuba or the Detroit Tigers or anything, World Series readings or any of that. I always think of you as Tim Wendel, baseball writer, and that's a badge of
Always
honor
will
that.
be.
Oh, we talk about Ken Rosenthal and these people that Kirchen, these lifers, Buster, the lifers. You got all grown up and you went out and you found culture and education and how long has it been since you were quote unquote a baseball writer, Tim?
Oh my, it's got to be 10 years, 8, 10 years, something like that. And
Did
I
you
still go back
identify
dabble.
as that for the first 50 years of your life? 45? I mean, like literally, what do I do? I'm a baseball writer.
Oh, sure. Since doing it in the Bay Area, being the swing man between the A's and the Giants, that happened, what, 86, 87? And then pretty much one of my, it's funny because I was just out in Miami for the Miami Book Fair for Rebel Falls, and I ran into a couple of our old compadres at Baseball Weekly, Dana Weiss and et cetera, who's been living down there. She's got the most interesting pivot. She's gone from baseball. She's now works, she heads up her family's jewelry shop and everything and does all this stuff. But anyway,
Well, I'm still friends with Pete Williams and
oh, Pete's
just
down there, yeah.
all of you guys in that era, the baseball writers, like it's all we
Well,
did. It's all we lived. You had to sort of live it and know it to be that good at it. And all these years later in life, my old friends are all, when I go to Tampa, I hang out with Pete Williams. Like
that's
literally.
right. That's right. And we were all at Baseball Weekly. And then that's where Dana, Pete, I was just talking to Paul White, who is our editor for so many
Is he
years.
still stuck in Buffalo, or did he get someplace where they got better weather than I saw on Sunday night?
No, actually, he was at the game last night. So
Oh,
I was talking
Jesus.
to him
He's
from the
still getting
game.
younger. God love Paul. I got
Yeah,
to get Paul on.
he went, and at that game, the 49er game, he picked out like 3 months ago. He said, "I think it's going to be a really interesting game, and it might just snow." No, he lives in Orchard Park. He walked to the stadium last night. So,
All right, I got to get him. So this is what the old baseball heads, and I don't know what he's doing with his life, but like all of us who did that had to do something else.
yeah,
You
because
decided to do
the
like the most
circus kind of
grown-up
wind
thing ever
down.
and be like a real author.
Yeah, why not? And well, I don't know how real I am, but the new book's called Rebel Falls. I'll be up in Baltimore this Saturday, 4 o'clock at the Barnes and Noble at Homewood campus on St. Paul. And it'll be great to be back up on campus. I was
Hold on,
once a big
Saturday
man out there.
afternoon. I'm looking at my schedule. It's bye week around here. We don't have that, we
Yeah,
don't
come
have
on
these things going
down.
on. I might be in New Jersey with the Smithereens, but if I'm not, there's a ramen joint
The
over there I've been
Smithereens.
dying to check out. So especially on a cold
Oh.
winter's day. Tell us about Rebel Falls, though, because we're gonna talk baseball. Tim Wendel's here, a longtime USA Baseball reporter, writer. He is a professor in residence, which is a hot shot title over at Johns Hopkins as well. But you're like gonna be right on the Hopkins campus here this Saturday.
I'm
Talking
really
about a
gonna
book
miss it.
that's not like not a baseball book.
No, there's one baseball scene in it, and it's kind of become a joke. Everything now, I work a baseball scene into it. But Rebel Falls, let's go back. And we had fun with this in Miami just last weekend. If you think of the Civil War is all the way we were graded in school. It's all dates and generals, and it's Gettysburg and Vicksburg and all those burgs. And
Don't
what
forget
pe
Antietam, because I'm in
yeah.
Maryland.
Antietam. Antietam's great. And what people don't realize is that, especially as the war was winding down, Rebel Falls is set late summer, opens late summer 1864. Oh, what's the big deal? Big deal was the Confederates had spies all along our border with northern Canada, and our northern border with Canada extended from the Maritime Provinces all the way to Windsor, the other side of Detroit. Okay, what's the big deal? One of their schemes was to seize the only remaining Union warship on the Great Lakes at that point, called the USS Michigan. At that point, it was docked off Sandusky, Ohio, and Lake Erie. And their goal was not only to seize it, but, and this is all true, to bombard Toledo, Cleveland, Buffalo, Erie on the eve of the presidential election. If that happens, Lincoln loses. And it's interesting because you even spin out John Wilkes Booth, of course, assassinates Lincoln. He was very much involved in this. In fact, when they apprehended him and shot him in Port Royal, Virginia, 12 days after assassinating Lincoln, they start emptying his pockets, Nestor. Okay, they find, some coins. They find a pocket knife. They find a diary where he's saying he was going to be heralded as some conquering hero once he got south of the Mason-Dixon line. That didn't happen. But the other thing they pulled out that blew their minds was they found a banknote for significant amount of change through a bank in Montreal. They were funneling the money, laundering it from Richmond up through Canada, and they, in a sense, hatched that plot to assassinate Lincoln, first to kidnap him, then to assassinate him through Canada. And so a part of me goes, I grew up near Niagara Falls. So I start going, and I heard about this just briefly. It's in Doris Kearns Goodwin's Team of Rivals, a little mention in Carl Sandburg's Lincoln. And these guys who were part of they called it the Northwest Conspiracy, the Confederacy. And it was like, I had to know more. And the more I found out, I'm going, this happened right in my old backyard. This happened where it was snowing just last night for the football game. And so it teased out and ended up becoming a lot of fun. And it kind of overlooks, I think, it looks at two things overlooked in our appreciation or remembrance of the Civil War. Number one is the war was on all fronts, including up in British Canada, at least a spy war. And the other one was the role of women was overlooked. My heroine's a woman. And she kind of gets brought into the Union side to help their spy operation. And she's somewhat based on a woman. My character's made up, but she's a composite. And she's somewhat based on a woman named Sarah Edmonds, who was one of hundreds of women on both sides of the Civil War who dressed up as men, disguised themselves as men, and fought, literally down in the trenches. And this woman, Sarah Edmonds, like, she deserted, and we figure out now is because she probably had PTSD. And 20 years later, she's back in Michigan. She goes, "Man, I'm going broke. I could use that military pension." And she went back to court, actually outed herself somewhat to the guy she was with in her regiment, and got her pension. And you've got all cases of this. So, as you can tell, I got caught up with it. And the fact I was able to write about it at Niagara Falls, my old stomping grounds, is a lot of fun.
Well, you'll be in this week signing the book. And for anybody that knows Tim or has read any of his baseball true stories or novels, the fact that you're a writer, and I think of myself as a writer first. I mean, since the last time we got together, there's been a documentary that came out about my newspaper background. And like all I ever really wanted to do was be a columnist, right? Like to be the sport, to be John Steadman, and
John
I obviously.
Steadman.
See what I'm saying? So, and he's in the documentary, makes a little cameo. But I didn't think of a life beyond that. And then I found myself in radio, and people think of me as a radio person. I think of myself more as a journalist. But I think I've told you this, I've never written anything fictional in my life. In my whole, I'm 56 years old. I've never written a poem. I've never, like, literally, I've written books. Tombs and tombs and tombs of stuff. It
It,
letters. I give good letter. I'm a man of
it's
letters. You
not
know
that
this.
different. It's not that different.
But
And
this dreaming up this thing that didn't happen or thing that might have happened, like I always think to myself, I would have been a terrible songwriter. You know, there's things I could, you know, like I think I could play the guitar, but I don't think I could play the piano. You know, there's certain things that I don't think I could be good at. Writing fiction would be one of those things that feels very far-fetched to me because, like, why don't you write about something that's true? It's what you've been writing the whole time. Your fascination with a fiction, I mean, writing, it goes without saying. You're a professor, you're more than a baseball writer, Tim. But picking a book to write about and picking a Civil War theme and all that, is this your lane? Are you a Civil War buff or like because I would think if I ever do write anything a bit fictional about a rock star or something, it would be about music or some other place where my mind or my body or my heart has been. None of us were in the Civil War. All of that to me is very dreamy and PBS and black and white in the way I think of it.
Right. Maybe I think black and white, but I think a lot of it is there's a great novelist in DC, is a friend of mine, Tom Mallon, and he talks about the burden of truth in fiction, especially historical fiction. And you've got to do the research. I mean, the guys that are, I talked about the one made-up character. Everybody else, practically, in this book is real life, based on a real life character. And Tom has Tom has a philosophy. You do the research and you let the research take you, in a sense, where the story is. And it just gives it some real, like, strength and goodness. And it's funny because I just came back from Ireland, and I was on this kind of very strange, it was fun. You ever hear of a guy named Larry Kerwin? He was head of Black 47. They were on Letterman several times, and kind of an Irish punk band. And he now leads tours of Ireland, and he's written several books, including novels too. And he is a songwriter. I would urge folks to check him out, and some of his stuff is really pretty cool. They're Black 47 disbanded about 10 years ago, but he's still playing at times. And we got talking about writing and how, in a sense, fiction and nonfiction, the line isn't that big. You're going where the truth is leading you. And the truth can be just, in essence, what is the era? What's the world? What's the philosophy? And one of the things I'm hitting kind of hard in Rebel Falls, and it's probably because I've been living the last 7 years in Charlottesville, most of the time, is just this ongoing fascination or sickness we have with the lost cause. And how, in a sense, the South may have lost the war in the battles, but in terms of carrying the philosophy or what edict went forward, they won. And I think some of the things, it's just remarkable because you can see history everywhere. One of the things I'm watching kind of closely now is a couple months ago, they started to tear down, there's been for more than 100 years, a memorial to the Confederates at Arlington Cemetery. To me, that just sounds bananas. And they started to finally tear it down. Now, with changes in our political scheme, I'm kind of wondering, is that going to continue to be torn down? And I think sometimes we think of history as everything's set in on stone tablets or something. This is the way it is. Learn the dates, pass the test. But history is ongoing, and history is very fluid. And if anything, history and how it's remembered, what our narrative is very up for grabs right now.
Well, and being written by winners, for
Yes,
better or
well,
worse.
but in the case of the Civil War, you flip it around, the history has been written by the losers, and that's very interesting. That's
Is
the
your
lost
book,
cause.
Tim, what if the South won the war?
No. Not at all. It's like how close they actually did in real events to creating an incident that maybe costs or probably cost Lincoln re-election. And if they had seized this warship, which is all true, they potentially bring England into the war. What people don't realize is our Civil War was very close to becoming the First World War. England's watching this whole thing. France is watching it all. And if they were looking for any type of excuse to come in and say, maybe recognize the Confederacy, maybe take some land from Canada. Canada at that point was all a matter of just provinces. So it's that's one of the things that blew my mind too. There's a great book out. It's kind of thick and a little bit dense, but it's called A World on Fire. And it's really about how close Britain came to coming into our Civil War. And if that had happened,
What
everything
was their
just went off.
interest?
Interest was pretty much pragmatic. It's like anything. Typical British thing. Their textile industry was hurting because the cotton in the South had been cut off by our blockade. You know, Britain's Britain. And maybe I'm just saying that after coming back from Ireland. They're always looking out for themselves and what kind of economic gain they can get.
Tim Wendell is here. He is hoping to gain economically by selling you some books for the holidays. He is a
I'm
writer
just
in
looking to
residence.
see some friends. It'll be good.
Yeah, tell everybody what you're doing again this week so we can invite everybody out because it did get you back in here, and we're going to get to some baseball with you're a baseball sage as much as we'll sit here and talk about Civil War
I'm
stuff.
an old sage. I'm a sage on
You've
the
forgotten a
stage.
lot about baseball that I will re-remember once we get into it. But you're still with Johns Hopkins, and you're really right off campus. You're signing the book, right?
Yeah, I'll be right at the Barnes and Noble right off campus on Saturday at 4 o'clock. And please come by. I'll be there a little bit early, and it'd just be good to see people. You know, one of the things I regret a little bit about being down in Charlottesville, it's a little bit farther to get up there to the beautiful Baltimore
Don't
City,
have crab
which I
cakes in
love.
Charlottesville. I know they don't. If they do, I wouldn't trust it anyway.
Well, actually, I had some the other night, and they weren't bad.
Well, you must have been your grandmother's recipe. Tim has written a book called Rebel Falls. It has nothing to do with baseball, but there's a baseball piece in there somehow, some way in the 1860s. Abner Doubleday appears in a fever dream. All right, man. Yeah, I think I had you on in May. I went back when your book came out. I think it was May. And it's now the holidays, and everybody should go by for the holidays. And if nothing else, come by and bring you some eggnog on Saturday. Where are you with the Oriole thing and where they are right now? And I am watching this, and we could talk on the field, Rutschman and pitching. And I'm about payroll, and I'm about 10,000 empty seats at a playoff game where tickets were $10. I met Mr. Rubenstein for the first time about five, night before the election, so about 5 weeks ago, out at Beth DeFillo. He gave a speech, and I went up to him, and he didn't care about me, whatever. I mentioned my access and who I was and Louis Aparicio and whatever. But I said to him, and if I never speak to him again, I said, there's been a lot of trauma here. And I want you to know that. Like, there's been a lot of trauma here. And that's what the 10,000 empty seats out in left field are in trying to rebuild something here that I know you being upstate and Rochester and, Cal Ripken back in the late 70s and early 80s coming up, and Eddie Murray kind of skipped that place. But just in a general sense, from the baseball heartbeat of all of this, that the Baltimore Orioles couldn't sell out a home playoff game in October when they've only had a handful of them in this century at $15, not at 150, but not crazy. Tim, I was here for it. I was kind of shocked. I mean, like
I was shocked too
yeah,
from
and it
looking from
worries
afar.
me for all of it. And that's where I come from a good place. I come from a place where I don't like 20,000 Eagles fans in our stadium. I don't like empty seats at our base. I like a vibrant, that's at the heart of all of this. I want it to be vibrant. Doesn't feel vibrant to me right now, and I live here.
Well, I think what you're touching on is maybe one of the biggest things that's tough to bring back, and that's trust. And I think in this day and age, trust is like quicksilver. And I think if anything, it's been accented by the money. Because the other thing, you know, and that's what you touched on, two things that are very difficult to do in an off season. Number one, generate trust and, you know, win back, you know, your fan base. The other one is free agent wise. I'm, you know, again, I'm from afar. I don't cover this any that much anymore. But free agent wise, I think they're in trouble. And I'm just kind of going, who's pitching for these guys? Who's playing, especially if they lose some more of these guys? And so and it's funny because I was thinking, you know, when they lost the playoffs, and I was watching some of that, and they reminded me, and this is going to sound ludicrous, I think, in some ways, but this is me dating myself. But they reminded me a little bit of when I was full bore, fresh on the baseball beat, and they were reminding me of the old Toronto Blue Jays. Now, why were they reminding me of that? Because the Blue Jays went through some real problems, you know, in the playoffs. You know, they couldn't seem to get to the World Series. Granted, they were winning more playoff games than the Orioles are right now. But if anything, there was a huge uproar in Toronto, and I was covering the American League at that point to break up this team, This team's a disaster. It can't win. We've got to do something else. And one of the guys I really respect in the game, and I've talked to him on multiple levels, is Pat Gillick. I've not only talked to him about being GM of the Blue Jays, but as you well know, I did another book called High Heat, and one of the big stars in that is Steve Dalkowski, who should have come to the Orioles, should have been Earl Weaver's first big closer, and Gillick was his roommate in minor league ball. Had just some amazing stories about him. But one of the things going back to Gillick, the GM, that I give him credit for is he kept it together. You know, he kept that Blue Jay team together and he kind of put off the criticism. Now, you could say it's easier then. You know, we don't have like the Dodgers of the world with seemingly empty, you know, unlimitless resources. And maybe it was easier for Gillick to keep that team together as opposed to breaking it up. But because he kept them together, they win. They win in 92 and 93. You know, first team I
Well,
ever
Skydome
covered.
came on in '89, and that was Dave Steve and Lloyd Mosby, and they weren't winning. They were losing playoff
Right.
series to
And
the
if
A's primarily, right?
to the A's, and he pretty much Gillick kept that team together and then added these really cool pieces. You know, here comes Paul Molitor. Here comes Rickey Henderson. Here comes Dave Winfield. You know, kind of almost rental players.
Joe
But
Carter.
yeah, Joe Carter. Yeah, Joe Carter. They traded for him. He stuck around and won him that one series. So anyway, I may be reaching, but the Orioles, when they lost and everybody was bummed out, they reminded me of, say, the Blue Jays in 90, 91, maybe something like that. When you said when you write the A's were beating them up, but good. So,
Well, they had this young core and they haven't had to pay anybody, right? And they got Burns
yeah.
on this rental and they had so much Ortiz to give away to get that kind of a pitcher to rent him. And then it doesn't work out. You don't hit the ball. But the new ownership and Peter being dead and gone. And I just want to, Tim Wendel's my guest here, longtime baseball writer. I want to say this with Luke and I. Luke and I got into like a fight on the air 2 weeks ago. He got mad at me because I said, dude, you have Stockholm syndrome about this. And he got pissed at me. And we went back and forth. And I've actually had a couple of listeners say, you made me uncomfortable, the two of you, because of your relationship. But, and it was like full on. Luke was pissed at me. And I said, no, I don't think you're hearing me right. Like, I think you are of the mindset that we're poor, we're broke, we're small market, we have no money, we're barely going to be able to keep Henderson, we're small market, small market. You know, like you're part of the battered fan base of the last 30 years. I'm part of Peter inherited, right? The top payroll. And let's go get Palmeiro. Let's go get Key. Let's go get Alomar. Let's keep Ripken. Let's sign Messina. Let's keep our guys. And Gillick was running that operation here
Sure
with a
was.
top five payroll. Now, I'm not unrealistic about what the Washington baseball situation represents financially, our Fortune 500, but I'm also not dumb about what a 74-year-old guy who knows nothing about, he knows nothing about baseball, Tim. Like,
See, I don't really know him. I
all
don't
but
know him.
admitted that. No, like up on stage, and I know one of the reasons they'll never let me near him because he has no baseball equity. You know what I mean? Like at all. And he said on stage he attended 38 Oriole games last year. He said that's 38 more games than he's been to in the last 50 years.
But
So
the
he's
question
really
is,
not. So,
are the people around him solid enough?
well, that's, I don't, I don't. I know the guy that introduced himself as the PR guy came up to me and admitted to me 5 minutes in when his eyes went back like this, and I'm talking ball. And I looked at him, I'm like, you don't know anything about baseball, do you? He's like, no. And I'm like, well, that's not an embarrassment, but it's an admission. And to me, this guy wants to be a hero. I remember that well when Peter bought the team. They all want to be heroes, right? This is different than I'm putting 40 million up and buying a team for 150 million, and it's coming with $45 million in cash and like all of that. This is $1.8 billion. This comes with $600 million to fix up the stadium. So it's really discounted. I've had, you know, I had Kurt on a couple of weeks ago, Badenhausen, talking about it being a depressed sale price. So I get all of that, and I get the exit strategy. We're going to sell it for $4 billion, and we're going to win championships. We're all going to be hero. I get all of that. And but if you're thinking about Boog Powell and Brooks Robinson and Jim Palmer, and you haven't been attuned to how effed up this has been, and you haven't talked to anybody in town about how many businesses are dead and gone, buried, never to come, but Crown Gasoline's never going to be a sponsor again, right? So, but where the business is, where the level of, you mentioned trust and all of that. And I think to myself, what's your play here? And when I sat in that auditorium, beautiful synagogue over Beth Tefillo, he said, well, you know, the general way we do it in the baseball business is whatever we make, we spend. And I'm thinking, well, that won't be good enough here. You know what I mean? Like literally, if the 10,000 empty seats are where you are, and this Masson thing you have, and the financial piece of whatever sky boxes you have sold, whatever 10-cent packages you have with season ticket holders that came from nothingness, from 114 losses, like to where they are now, and this Birdland membership, they offended everybody, Tim. They sent out a Birdland membership renewal in August that raised all the prices, lowered all the benefits in the middle of the pennant race, and then they went on to not play good baseball for 2 months. I don't know who the grown-ups are over there, but they ain't from around here, Tim. I mean, Katie Griggs, there's no one in Baltimore. I looked her up on LinkedIn. We had two mutual friends that I have 20,000 people in Baltimore that I'm linked with. She's linked to two. She doesn't know anybody here. And I'm concerned about where their payroll and their expectations are, other than be heroes and we can win and all of that. But like, I want to see a strategy in a way that there was never a strategy here for 3 decades. All that lost trust you talked about, the first thing they need to do is come in and be, even if they're lying about being transparent, lie and be transparent. Show me something. Show me a, show me something that shows me Peter's dead, you're alive, and you're here, and you're going to do it differently. You're going to need to do it differently, including taking my press pass, the stupid stuff that they've already done that has said to me, like, doesn't feel like they're running it differently. It feels like they're going to run it sort of on the cheap because they have no way to run it financially off of optimism that they're going to sell a lot of tickets for a lot of money because I live here and I know better. And I'm worried about that part of it, that they're already Stockholm syndrome. We're poor. We're small market. Sorry. This is what we
Well,
are.
that's not going to cut it in this day and age, because you well and I know. I mean, you don't have to spend, I don't know, like drunken sailors or something. But the world's different. It's, the Dodgers. I keep coming back to them. I'm looking at their payroll and how they just kind of regenerate it, and how every new hotshot from Japan seems to want to go there, and they have company. The Yankees are going to keep spending. Looks like they're going to gear up. If Washington ever gets its act together, God forbid for the Orioles, if the Nationals ever got sold to somebody else, look out. I think Mike Rizzo's chomping at the bit to spend more money and get more free agents. And it's going to be interesting, I think, Nestor, the dynamic you just set up there, which I didn't know as well as you just rolled out, is alarming. And I think in some ways, Oriole fans, backers can watch what's going to happen with the Juan Soto sweepstakes. Not
How
that,
can they not be in on that?
that's what I'm thinking,
They
but
they've spent
they
less
aren't.
money as in the industry. They're the worst. They've spent they have no investment at all. And the notion, well, we need to save money to pay Gunnar Henderson. Gunnar Henderson might just decide he doesn't want to be here. And you know what I mean? Like,
Exactly.
I'm not keeping my money waiting for him. He ain't
At
signing here.
least they should be involved. At least, I guess they were sniffing around for Blake Snell. Okay, that's kind of cool. But at least they should be. I don't expect them to get Juan Soto, but in a sense, they should be at least involved, because that kind of shows they're serious and they realize the dynamics of today's marketplace. You can't, the scenario you're painting is reminding me of what the Minnesota Twins became like in the 90s. Almost like, please, we're just going to be poor, 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 and we're going to be a candidate for contraction type of thing. And there's a lot of weird things going on. I was talking to some good friends of mine down in Tampa Bay. We were talking Tampa Bay earlier.
They're
Man,
going to
here
play in a
come.
minor league ballpark.
Yeah, but how
Nothing
long?
screams we're minor league like playing in San Juan, brother.
Right. And the thing is, I don't think that ownership is sharp, and they're not going to put up with that for too long. At some point, the Rays are going to become kind of this weird team, maybe looking for a home. And maybe it's up in Montreal, who God knows where it is. But, there's a lot of things in play, and I don't think you can kind of sit back and say, yeah, we've got a. Count our nickels and be frugal and all that. I think, at least in some ways, and Juan Soto may be a great example, at least you've got to be at least front and center on it.
Tim Wendel is here. He loves baseball. He loves writing. He is the author of all authors, writing Rebel Falls. He's signing his book this week over at Barnes & Noble in Homewood on Saturday. You can follow his work, Tim Wendel, Wendel. Follow him and find him. Writer in residence at Johns Hopkins and baseball aficionado. Last thing on the baseball thing,
Sure.
and I'll hang it up on this.
No, don't hang it
Just
up. I'm learning a lot, and I think, again, I'm apprehensive. Baltimore, the Orioles cannot play it this way. You know, they have to do something different. And I'm not saying they've got to become the Dodgers of the East or take on the Yankees when it comes to spending, but at least they've got to wake up. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Well, the Rutschman thing is disconcerting. The Gunnar Henderson having Boras thing and how much money it will cost whenever he's $50, $60 million. What difference does it make? If you're a billionaire and you come in and be Mr. Big Pockets and buy everybody beer the opening day and act like you're the savior and put yourself in all the commercials with Ripken and do all, and you don't even know anything about baseball, and you're going to say, well, Mike Elias told me this and Katie told me, that's not going to be good enough here. And I know you're 74 and you're bored and you're a billionaire and like whatever, but like this has been so poorly run for so long, so obviously. I mean, last summer they banned their broadcaster.
Yeah, I
Like,
love
you know what I mean? Like, this happened last year. Like, this is
that.
not. And the fact that they let Greg Bader and TJ Brightman run the place this summer and be the first line of information to them is insanity. And now they've had 10,000 empty seats in the outfield, and I don't even know that they're pissed about it. I'm pissed about it. And I don't even think like you think, which is if Washington ever got up and started to run a little bit, they would lose Bowie and Columbia. You know what I mean? Because there's no reason to be an Oriole fan unless you were an Oriole fan. And now that you are an Oriole fan, what's it going to cost me? And this is where the digital and the television and the revenue line is. And I don't bring Curt Schilling's name up too much for obvious reasons, but Curt married my best friend growing up, and I've had a lifetime of baseball conversations with Curt. Curt's a knucklehead about a lot of things, but about baseball, when
No,
he was
he
the
knows baseball.
When he was the team rep back in your era in the early 90s, Curt and I talked a lot of baseball. And he and this is during the strike, right? This is Lords of the Realm, all of that 30 years ago. He would always say, they're millionaires. They own baseball teams. They have the money. They have the money. They have the money. And at various points, whether it was the Detroit Tigers spending a lot of money, or the San Diego Padres in recent days spending more money, or the San Diego Padres having a fire sale in the middle of Tony Gwynn, or the Marlins bilking all of South Florida so many times that even my buddy who lives in Weston, who's got plenty of money and could buy plenty of Marlin tickets, says F them. They're creeps. Major League Baseball were creeps for allowing any of this to happen, and they built that stadium that like so they burned South Florida over 30 years that even the people who love baseball there won't invest in it in a way.
Exactly.
And Baltimore loves baseball. But I don't know the financial part of this and the structure of all of this underneath the billionaires who can do whatever they want. And look, Rubenstein, well, we got plenty of money. Okay, then spend it. Spend it stupidly because you're a billionaire and you spent $1.8 billion on the friggin' team thinking you're going to make $4 billion out of it. So while you're here, why not go $100 million upside down for 5 years? You know what I mean? So your payrolls really should be 140, 130. Make it 210 for a couple years. Just put 500 million extra into it, knowing it's going to come out when you sell it because you're 74 and you want to win. Like to me, that because this isn't getting saved by Masson money. It's not getting saved by digital money. It's not getting saved by Legg Mason or T. Rowe or the 28 banks that used to be here or Johns Hopkins ponying up $10 million a year to put their name on the stadium or any of that. And it's not coming from Middle River fans who aren't even paying $65 for a month-long membership to come to every game just so you could sell them beer at $15. I don't know their model, Tim. And this is the problem. The model was always we have a rich owner, we have TV, you know, Miss Gertrude, she's 101 and she's got cable television and we're sucking $40 a month off of her and she didn't know baseball. Like that's their model has been to bilk people off of cable television and take that money and sell some tickets and sell some parking and sell some logos and sell some swag and put all that into a tent and sign Derek Jeter or not sign Derek Jeter, or if you're the Pittsburgh Pirates, just pocket the money and lie about it. You just take the revenue sharing you lied about and pocket that. So this is my history with it. And everything I've just told you would be news to David Rubenstein. I don't think he knows anything about baseball. Like, literally, I don't think he cares. He's sort of a weird old arrogant billionaire dude who bought a team and like this is going to be a toy and he's going to be a hero. Dude, if you're not trying to sign the best players, you know this and I know this. If you're not trying to sign the best players, you're not going to win.
Well, you at
If,
least got
like
to
if
try. You at least got to try. It doesn't mean you got to sign him, but you got to try. And I thought that you summed that up very well. I love coming on this show. I learned so much.
Oh, please stop.
but
Well,
no,
I am
but
passionate
they.
about it, and they should be pissed that there's 10,000 empty seats at the playoff game.
Exactly. That was an embarrassment. And the thing is, going back to what I was talking about before, you maybe could have gotten away with this model or lack thereof. 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when I was on the beat, because we had plenty of. I mean, the Twins came to mind, the Rays for a while were like that, et cetera. I don't think you can right now, or because the fans, I don't want to say are smarter, but I think they're more, again, they've got many more options. They really kind of follow things. And you're talking about 10,000 empty seats for a playoff game. Well, I expect they'll probably make the playoffs again next year, but unless you get some kind of coherent philosophy that maybe the fan can't articulate at all, but at least they understand it and they kind of feel like they're trying to make the team better. They're looking to make my team better. If you're not doing that, you're going to have more empty seats next time around because people got other things to do.
Tim, last thing for you, because I did want to give you some. I started with digital and money. This is really where I wanted to get into. The
Sure.
money that underlies all of this for baseball is what I care about, because that's going to fund whether. I mean, they could have got lucky and won the World Series 6 weeks ago, right? Like that could happen. They were good enough. I said to my wife back in May and June, I said to her, this might be the best team they've ever, ever, ever had, going back to 73 and 74 when they had a young Baylor and they had Palmer in his prime, like. Having Rutschman, having Henderson, having at what I thought was Bradish, what I thought might have been Means, what you know what I mean? They had until their arms fell off, and that's something that didn't happen in our era much. Happened. You mentioned Dalkowski already, that was before my era, but it didn't happen much, right? You didn't feel like Dave Steeb's arm's gonna fall off in Toronto. You didn't feel like if you had Boddicker and Storm Davis and Dennis Martinez, that you were gonna three of them were gonna be hurt next year
Sure,
and
you were
hurt
going
for
to
2
lose half
years and
of them,
go under a knife, right? Tommy
right?
John was a guy in our era, not a surgery. And you interviewed him, I know. So, but I would say for me, with where the model is, and that's where I go back to the Curt Schilling thing to say they had a model that funded not just the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Red Sox and funded all of this. Where is the money coming from in this community if this community has to support it and Major League Baseball is going to try to pull some sort of media thing that they've never been able to get any of these men to agree on anything financially? If they ever could have done that, they would be like everyone else, and the Orioles would have a salary cap and either would have enough to sign the best players or not. Because we don't talk about this when it comes to can the Ravens afford Lamar? We're small market. We can't. I mean, it's an
That's
absurd
a totally different
conversation.
dynamic. Yeah,
It's an
that's a
unfair conversation, and it's one that I'm not sure Mr. Rubenstein or Mr. Arrighetti have a full measurement on what this community has been through, having a football team stolen, having a baseball team threatened, having like and then having our people held hostage for like there should be no happy or if there's a happy Oriole fan around here, they have a really low bar. Like you know what I mean? Like I just would say since 1983, right? Where's the splash, man?
I don't see
It's
any
like I told
splash.
Rubenstein, I've waited my whole effing life for you to get here. You're here. Now do something.
Do something.
Do something.
Surprise me. Well, it's funny you bring up football because I can remember, and you brought up Lords of Realm. John Hellyer, good friend of mine, wrote that, and I
Is he
helped him
alive
out.
and well?
I believe so.
Can you
I
get him
haven't.
on my show? It would be a
I'll
bucket
see.
list get for I've never
Let me see if I
John
can still
Hellyer's
find him.
like above. I've never. I'd be afraid to speak to John. I'd be
Oh
intimidated.
no, he's a great guy. But I remember when he was working on Lords of the Realm, and I helped him out a little bit on it because he had missed a couple ownership meetings, so I filled him in on it because at that point I was covering ownership for Baseball Weekly, and he told me something. He kind of looked at his crystal ball, and he said, at that point, a lot of the argument, as you said, was over salary cap. It's not like the NFL. Teams can afford players. Same with the NHL, whatever it may be. And in baseball, you can't. There's no salary cap. There's none of this, as fans well know. And I remember Hellyer one time, we were talking about, and he just said, "This sport is nuts." And he was talking about baseball. And I'm going, "Why?" And he's going, "I'm not advocating for a salary cap. I'm not advocating for these things because it'll never happen, with the way the players' union was then." But he said, "This sport is like, it's being done without a net. It's a trapeze act without a net. And when somebody falls, they're going to get hurt bad. Whereas, if you fall in the NFL, the net's there. It's revenue sharing. Okay, maybe you become the Carolina Panthers for a couple of years or something like that, and you are terrible, but you're going to be back between draft picks and salary, revenue sharing and a salary cap. And that's not the case in baseball. And so that means the people that really excel are like the Andrew Friedmans out in LA. I mean, they're sharks, and you better be ready to compete because it's not like, several times you've said during our conversation, "Oh, we're poor Baltimore, we can't compete." That doesn't add up to anything. You can maybe say that in the NFL and things will come around because there's mechanisms that will help. There's no such help in baseball. So there needs to be a philosophy, and maybe it's back to the old Oriole way. Maybe they're doing things up through their minor leagues and that allows them not to pay somebody like a Juan Soto so much or whatever. But there's got to be some kind of philosophy or some kind of approach, because if not, you're dead in the water in this day and age.
Back when Steve Bisciotti considered me a real media member, we used to take long walks together.
You are a real media member. You'll always be a media member in my world.
Well, when he and I got together, back when I was a real media member, I remember saying to him, and I wrote a book about this, about why he bought the team, and a huge chapter about that at one point the Minnesota Vikings were the Florida Marlins. There were other sport. He didn't want to just own a sports franchise. Rubenstein wanted to be a big shot. He didn't want to own a team. He would have gladly bought the Nationals had that been available. He even said he was going to go in on the Nationals with Ted Leonsis. Like literally, he said that as part of his elevator speech, right? The notion that Steve Bisciotti said to me, and I remember him saying this to me on the fields at Nomings Mills when they first got the facility, because they had a really successful soccer match here. The night it was a friendly. Ronaldinho played in it, like tickets were $300 to get in, and it was a hardcore friendly in August. And I said to him, "Well, wouldn't you want to like try an MLS team here? We don't have the NHL." He said it's like a prom. His cigar. It's like a prom. Once a year they'll all come out, but they're, supportive of that. Besides, I don't like soccer. I don't like soccer. I said, "Well, you like baseball?" He said, "Yeah, I like baseball, but like if I bought the Orioles, we couldn't win. We can't win. How am I going to compete with the Yankees and Red Sox? We can't win. Like, I don't believe in buying a business at that level that's bottom of industry when you
Good point.
look at it and we're never going to generate that revenue. So then where is it coming from? It better be fun for you, Mr. Rubenstein. And it better be, we bought $1.8 billion depressed because of the clowns that owned it. It comes with $600 million to fix up our house, and we get to decide what happens. Oh, we got gambling revenue now too, so we got that going on. And okay, so paid $1.8 billion. Let's pretend we paid 2.3, put another $500 million in for the first 5 years to wow them, so we can make sure we have enough money for Henderson, Rutschman, anybody comes along. But we need to wow people. We need to wow people. The Ravens play there. They have Lamar. That's wow. There's no wow here. It's Christmas time, and I don't see any wow, Tim. And I'm really, really underwhelmed and shocked and disappointed, early on that they haven't come forth right away with, this is Katie Griggs, this is Mike Elias, we're doing things differently. Stadium's open, Winter Carnival's on. You remember the Winter Carnival?
No, I
You
loved
know,
it.
like, let's go. Build an ice rink at center field and have people come skate on. I don't know. Do something that says to me, the Angelos family's gone. We're gonna be good to all the people, me being one of them, that were completely poorly treated by these people, which is why the empty seats were. That's the trauma. I went back to Mr. Rubenstein, and I just don't feel it, that there's a plan yet. And I'm shocked by this because I thought they were really sharp, well-funded. They could afford to buy goodwill. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Like,
Well,
and they
at
haven't even
least
tried to
afford to
do
do
that.
a splash or something like that. And what you're saying is the off season is as pivotal or more important in some ways than the regular season.
They're
This is
wasting
where,
valuable time.
Well, what the and they're losing headlines and such. It's funny when you called up and said, "Hey, come on the show. We'll talk some baseball and the Orioles." And it must have been when I haven't heard much of anything about the Orioles, unless they lost out on Blake Snell. I mean, maybe they're going to maybe lose some other guys, and
Angelos was
that's.
good at that too. He was in on Teixeira. Sure, he was. Right? Like you laugh out loud. That's where we got 15 years into this. He would say, "Well, we're going to sign all the best ball except for Mussina because we gave him enough money." Just the stupid ish that came out of his mouth was
But
just.
at least he was like, making headlines. It's funny. And Angelos was, but I don't know. I still flash back to Angelos. You were there the time, in a sense, his group bought the Orioles and they had that presser. And
Out
that
on the
was,
plaza in right field, I remember it well.
and it was still one of the most surreal things, but it generated headlines. I don't know if I was sitting next to you, I was sitting next to somebody, and the way Angelos was going on, he sounded like Al Haig after Reagan had been shot or something, like, "I'm in control here now in the West Wing of the White House." And yet, you can make jokes about it, and some of it was just totally out of bounds, but he made headlines. I think it's even worse to have things dead in the water and nothing going on. What are we, like 3 days before Christmas? And that would be kind of fun if they were had their act together. Some nice season tickets, partial season ticket plan you give to somebody for
Well, they're trying
Christmas.
to do that,
But
every day.
there's no splash,
There's no value in why I'm giving them money. And Tim, the big picture for me really is what the model's going to be, because that's what I've been talking about. Because the model isn't I'm giving Masson $3 a month and they're going to sign Gunnar Henderson with that, right? Like the notion is how much money does the Aparicio family, and I usually hold my credit card up right around now and hold it up and I say, you're after this. You're after my money in whatever way it is, whether it's buying a shirt, a hat, a logo,
What are you
a
going to do
ticket,
for it?
the games on TV. The fact that they've started restricting their games, and my mother's dead. She was 98 when she died, but she watched every Oriole game. And into her
Your
90s,
mom was
are they
great.
on Masson 1 tonight, Masson 2 tonight? That was hard enough. I remember back when I worked at the News American in the sports department, a guy would call from Highland Town. I'll make you laugh with this one. This is not fiction. This is a true story. A guy would call every night, and I'm a 15-year-old kid answering the phone, and he called and say, "Hey, I want to know, are the Orioles on color or black and white tonight?" Literally, that was the question. And that, like, when they play these games on Apple TV and Corbin Burns is pitching on a Friday night and they're playing Milwaukee and it's the middle of the year and they've won four games in a row and it's a Friday night, Apple TV ain't getting anything from me. And it in like I'm not playing that game with Peacock. I got your Peacock right here. Like, so give me a price. Here's my credit card. How much are the games? How much is me going to three or four games and getting a back rub and getting a free sandwich and whatever, whatever. How much are you to be a fan, to be in the club, to be in your country club, your orange country club? What does it cost me to at least get the games on my television? Because at the beginning, if I'm not watching the games, and I went through this with my buddy from Arkansas, from Dundalk. He's lived in Arkansas for 25. He runs the Clinton Library down there.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Dear, one of my best friends in the world. He came out to Pizza John's on my birthday, and this is like when it was raw. The season was over a couple of days, and I said to him, "You're tweeting about the Orioles all the time." He's like, "Well, I don't get the games. Like, cost too much money out of my, I'm not paying Major League back." And I'm thinking, you love the Orioles. You're in friggin' Arkansas. You won't give them $200, $300 for the year just to get to every game? Nah. I love
Wow.
them, but I don't like, I'd rather buy a jersey. I watch the games. And I'm thinking to myself, the minute you stop watching the games, you're out of the soap opera.
Well,
And to me,
yeah,
they
you're out of
need
the
to
current.
figure out how to get more people into the soap opera. In a town, Tim, where you'll see this when you come in this week, count the lacrosse fields over by
Oh,
Homewood. In this market specifically, we have little Johnny and little Jill, and we're going to give them a softball bat, a baseball glove, a lacrosse stick, right? That and this community, Mr. Rubenstein and Miss Griggs, they don't know about any of this. I live here my whole life. I've seen it. I've seen it ravage my own community where I go back to my own community now. Kids are playing soccer because they're Hispanic. I thought Hispanic kids play base. No, they play soccer in
They play
Dundalk City.
soccer
They're all
now.
Hispanic.
Last
And
time I was in
if they
Cuba, I
have
saw
any
kids playing
means and
soccer.
they're white, they play lacrosse.
Sure.
So I would just say to you, this new model where you're an Oriole fan, displaced or local, how are they getting me the games and how are they getting that avidity and rabidity that you and I always had.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how. If anything, again, going back to what we were talking about earlier, you at least got to get front and center on some things. I mean, the Orioles are just kind of out there. I kind of wonder what they're doing. Whereas I see about the Dodgers all the time, and I see about the Yankees, and I hate the Yankees, but
You still
whatever.
love baseball, Tim?
Yeah, I don't know if I love it as much. I
I would
only
admit
want
that
to.
to you because I love you and you're my friend. I admit that. I don't love baseball as much. I want to. I keep telling these people, why do you think I don't write about all this stuff and talk about this because I don't want to love it. Give me something to love.
Right.
My
And
bar's
what's
low too. I survived Angelos. You know what I mean? Just how about this? Be nice. It's not, yeah, that's free. Lenny Morey said it's free.
Well, I'm afraid they're losing the next generation. And you're asking, do I love baseball like I used to? And one of the reasons I hesitate is my son's now what, 31. My son was a great baseball player, great catcher. He does not really watch baseball anymore.
My kid doesn't watch baseball.
And it breaks my heart. At first I was going, well, he's not watching baseball during the regular season. Yeah, I can somewhat see that. And maybe he'll watch one or two games during the playoffs. And the thing is, that's a way we stay in contact. He lives up in New York. When we're watching a game like we were last night watching the Bills, I mean, we're texting all the time. We're going back and forth. It's half the fun. You're just like going, wow, did you believe that? What do you think of this? And it was an amazing weekend for him because he went to Michigan. So he got to see Michigan upset Ohio State and all that. He's gone to the last four Michigan Ohio State games.
So you have a
I can't.
sports relationship with your son. My son just, he's
Yeah.
seen the way I've been treated. He doesn't like it. My
Yeah.
son sat in the upper deck and my son carried a notebook and went out and covered, tried to be involved in what I like. He's just like, eh, my son doesn't like arrogance. My son doesn't like
Well,
all of that,
I kind of agree with that. But it's a language, it's a world. At least in part, my son and I share. But as you're bringing that up, I'm realizing we don't share the baseball world that much anymore. It's probably been, good gosh, 4 or 5 years since we went to a baseball game together. We've gone to football games together. I mean, the last snow game before the last night's snow game in Buffalo, we were at when they beat Miami on that field goal with as time ran out, and it was a snow globe and.
The Bills are at your soul, right? If the Bills win the Super Bowl, you'll cry.
I'll cry and I'll probably go to the victory parade. I'll probably be there with Paul White and Rasig and a whole bunch of other people.
Bellani? Take Bellani with you.
Bellani will be in
I
the
speak a little Buffalo with a guy in Charlottesville who is the writer in residence and professor at the Baltimore Johns Hopkins. Tim Wendle is a great friend, a great author, a good baseball sage. His book is Rebel Falls. It has nothing to do with baseball. It's about the Civil War. And you can have him sign it and get a handshake and hopefully a hot cup of cocoa or
Oh yeah, please come out. And
some
we
spiked
if people
eggnog
have
or something
baseball
over there.
questions, I'm actually happy to answer those too. So it'd be good.
Thanks for coming on.
Always a pleasure.
I don't talk baseball with a lot of people because unless they know more than me, I don't really want to talk to them. So you're one of those people that, like, you've forgotten more things. And if I delved into when you said 86, 87, I Bay Area, I'm like, oh man, Will the Thrill and
Yeah.
Canseco and the Bash Brother, you
And
were there for
Ricky.
all of that.
I
So
was there for all that. That was my entry into it. No, and I love coming on too. I love learning about what's going on up there, and it worries me a little bit.
well, it
So,
worries me a lot of it. I mean, and I don't have to make this stuff up because the truth has been stranger than fiction here ever since Angelos got involved. And my last name's still Aparicio, and I still am begging to be involved, holding my credit card out and just saying, be nice and let me do my job and come back and be a part of the baseball thing, and we'll have a good time. By the way, I leave you with this sage little snippet that came, and it came from Bob Ryan, so it's good. It's legitimate. The day that Willie Mays died, that morning, he put up Luis Aparicio is now the oldest living Hall of Famer.
There you go.
So I've got that going on. Louis's going to live a little while, hopefully. We're going to hang in there. But so I at least got that going on. So I still got the last name going,
That's great.
even though I've been exiting for 18 years. Tim Wendle still in. Buy his books, buy his baseball books, Castro's Cuba, 68, all this stuff that's out there. Make sure you go check it all out and find him out on Amazon where good books are sold. And buy local authors. He is the professor in residence here at Johns Hopkins. I am Nestor. We are WNSD, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking fiction and nonfiction and baseball and BaltimorePositive.com. See, we made it through the whole week and didn't talk about Justin Tucker.